Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we are undertaking a truly colossal journey. We're diving deep into the very foundation of modern geology.
We are. We're focusing on the work of Peter Molnar and his insights into plate tectonics.
And when you walk outside, I mean, everything feels so stable, so permanent.
It does. But Molnar's work, it really forces you to confront this incredible reality that our planet is a constantly shifting machine.
So we're peeling back the layers on the one unifying theory that explains what pretty much every major geological process on Earth.
That's right. For centuries, geology was really fragmented. You know, people would map volcanoes over here, earthquakes over there.
Mountains somewhere else.
Exactly. And they didn't know the connection. So the whole mission of this deep dive is to understand the elegant, all-encompassing system that links them all together.
And that really gets at why this matters today. Before this revolution, geology was just descriptive, right?
It's just cataloging features. After Molnar and his generation applied quantitative analysis, it became predictive.
Predictive, so you can use it to assess hazards, find resources.
And even understand the deep, long-term context for things like climate change. It's basically the roadmap for how our planet operates.
Okay, so let's introduce our guide for this journey, Peter Molnar. What made his perspective so crucial?
Well, Peter Molnar was a geophysicist, a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, and his career spanned more than four decades.
Okay.
His whole background is really rooted in understanding what's called continental deformation. He was one of the first researchers to really aggressively use technologies like GPS.
To actually measure the ground moving.
With astonishing precision, yeah. So while the foundation of the theory was laid in the 1960s with these big, rigid plates.
Molnar was part of the second generation.
He was. He wasn't just chronicling the revolution. He was on the front lines, solving its biggest, messiest problems.
What do you mean by messy?
Well, the original theory gave us this beautiful, simple model. You know, plates moving cleanly. But Molnar's great contribution was applying that to the incredibly complex, non-rigid reality of the Earth.
So not so simple in practice.
Not at all. I mean, if two oceanic plates meet, it's a tidy subduction. One slides under the other. But if two continents collide...
Like the Himalayas.
Exactly. Think of the Himalayas and the massive Tibetan Plateau. That's where the crust buckles, it rotates, it deforms in all these complicated ways. And that was Molnar's specialty.
He bridged the gap between the beautiful theory and the messy reality on the ground.
He really did. He showed us where the simple model breaks down and what happens next.
So let's get to the central argument then. What is plate tectonics at its core?
The central argument is that the Earth's outer shell, the lithosphere, is a massive, fragile mosaic of plates. And these plates are in constant slow motion, driven by forces deep inside the planet. And wherever these plates interact at their boundaries, that's where all the action is.
All the major geological features, mountains, trenches, volcanoes.
Everything. It's the ultimate unifying principle. It took all these seemingly isolated events, like an eruption in Indonesia or an earthquake in California.
And showed they were all part of the same global process.
Exactly. It completely overturned that old fixist view, the idea that the continents were just stuck in place forever.
It's really an intellectual journey. From the early thinkers all the way to modern satellite measurements that can track this movement down to the millimeter.
And it's not just a history lesson. He shows how these plate movements influence climate, where we find valuable resources and how we assess hazards today.
Let's start with that history then, because it's such a classic story of a scientific idea being ridiculed before it triumphs.
Right. Before the 1960s, fixism was the rule. The Earth was static.
And then along comes Alfred Wegener. A meteorologist, of all people.
A meteorologist, yeah. Early 20th century, he proposes continental drift, the idea that all continents were once merged in a supercontinent, Pangaea.
And he had so much circumstantial evidence, the continents looked like they fit together.
The jigsaw fit, yes. And he had identical land fossils matching rock types on coasts that are now thousands of miles apart.
And the climate evidence, too. Glacial deposits in the tropics.
He did. He had all of this. But, and this is a crucial point, he was basically rejected by the entire geological establishment.
Why? Why was he rejected?
Simple. He couldn't answer the how. He didn't have a plausible physical mechanism powerful enough to move these massive continents through what they thought was a rigid ocean floor.
So it was just seen as fantasy.
Complete fantasy. The mechanism was only revealed decades later after World War II, thanks to military technology.
Sonar and magnetometers.
Exactly. They allowed scientists to map the deep ocean floor for the first time, and they found these massive underwater mountain chains running right down the middle of the oceans, the mid-ocean ridges.
And that's where Harry Hess comes in with the theory of seafloor spreading.
Right. The idea that new oceanic crust was constantly being generated at these ridges, like a slow-motion conveyor belt, pushing the continents apart.
But they still needed definitive proof.
They did. And it came from paleomagnetism. It sounds complicated, but the idea is simple. As molten rock cools at the ridge, tiny magnetic minerals inside it align with the Earth's magnetic field, like tiny compass needles.
And the Earth's magnetic field flips every few hundred thousand years.
Yes. So the cooling rock records those reversals. And what they found was this stunning symmetrical pattern of magnetic stripes, like a barcode, mirroring each other perfectly on either side of the ridge.
That symmetry. That had to be the proof.
That was the smoking gun. Yeah. It was irrefutable evidence that the seafloor was spreading away from the ridge. It gave Wegener his mechanism.
So let's talk about the architecture of this system. You have the rigid outer layer, the lithosphere.
Floating on the hotter, weaker layer below it, the asthenosphere. And all the action happens where the plates meet.
At the boundary.
Right. And there are three main types. First, you have divergent boundaries, where plates pull apart. The Mid-Atlantic Ridge is the classic example. New crust is made there.
Okay. And then you have the most violent interactions. Convergent boundaries, where plates collide.
And we have to pause here, because this is where Molnar specialized. The details of these collisions.
Yeah, okay.
Because there are huge differences. When a dense oceanic plate hits a lighter continental plate, the ocean plate sinks back into the mantle. That's called subduction. It's pretty clean. It creates trenches and volcanic mountains like the Andes.
But what happens when two continents crash into each other? That's where the simple model gets complicated.
That's where the elegance breaks down. When two continents collide, like India and Asia, neither one wants to subduct. They're both too buoyant.
So they just crumple.
They crumple, they buckle, they shorten, and they thicken immensely. This is that messy reality. The crust piles up, creating the Himalayas and the vast Tibetan plateau.
And you need things like GPS, which Molnar used, to actually measure that complex deformation.
Correct. And then the third type of boundary is transform. This is where plates just slide horizontally past one another.
The San Andreas Fault.
The most famous example.
Yeah.
No crust is created or destroyed, but you get these very large, shallow earthquakes.
So we know how they interact. And this question is why? What's the engine driving this whole system?
Traditionally, the simple answer was mantle convection. You know, these huge, slow currents of hot rock rising and cool rock sinking, and the plates just passively riding on top.
Like a conveyor belt.
Right. But the modern consensus, which Molnar's work reflects, is that the plates are far from passive. The main driving forces are actually gravitational. They're called slab pull and ridge push.
Okay, that's a big distinction. So the plates aren't just riding along. How does slab pull work?
Imagine a heavy chain sliding off a table. Once enough of it is over the edge, its own weight pulls the rest of the chain down with a lot of force.
Okay, I see.
It's the same idea. That cold, dense, sinking oceanic plate at a subduction zone, the slab pulls the rest of the plate behind it into the mantle. It's now believed to be the single strongest force in the entire system.
And ridge push is the other one.
Yeah, that's the secondary force. At the mid-ocean ridge, the new crust is hot, so it's elevated. Gravity just causes the whole plate to slowly slide downhill away from that high ridge.
So convection gets it started, but slab pull and ridge push are what really move things along.
That's the modern view.
And when we think about the real-world consequences, we have to talk about hazards. The Pacific Ring of Fire is the perfect case study.
It is. That entire region encircles the Pacific Plate, and it's just dominated by convergent boundaries, by subduction zones.
Which is why it has most of the world's volcanoes and the most powerful earthquakes.
Exactly. The model lets us predict where these disasters are most likely to happen based on the boundary type.
But what about volcanoes away from the boundaries, like Hawaii?
Right. Those are hot spots. They're caused by these deep mantle plumes columns of superheated material rising from near the Earth's core. They're fixed in place.
So as the Pacific Plate moves over this fixed plume,
it creates a chain of volcanoes. And because the plume is fixed, that chain of islands acts like a geological odometer. It lets us track the plate's speed and direction over millions of years.
That's incredible. So when we step back from all the mechanics, what are the key themes, the big lessons from Molnar's work?
I think the first one is simply the dynamic nature of Earth. Our human perception of permanence is just an illusion. The ground beneath us is always moving.
At the speed your fingernail grows, but it's relentless.
It's relentless, and that leads to the second theme, the theory's unifying framework and predictive power.
It's not just collecting facts anymore.
No, it provides a single story that connects everything, from fossils to magnetic stripes, and that allows science to make testable predictions, which is the hallmark of a really powerful theory.
And the success of the theory itself points to a third theme, right? The integration of multiple lines of evidence.
Absolutely. The theory wasn't accepted because of one argument. It was because all these different fields, paleomagnetism, seismology, GPS data, they all independently pointed to the same conclusion. It's a beautiful example of how science self-corrects.
You know, the work is full of these really profound ideas. There's one idea that it's all about seeing the Earth as a kind of machine.
Yes. The idea that plate tectonics is a comprehensive framework for understanding how Earth works as a dynamic system. It's not just about moving continents. It's a systems level model for the entire planet.
And then there's the point about prediction. The beauty of the theory lies in its ability to make testable predictions.
And that's what separates science from just telling stories. We can calculate where stress is building up in the crust, even if we can't say exactly when the earthquake will happen.
And finally, the need to adjust our own sense of time. That understanding plate tectonics requires thinking in terms of deep time.
This is the hardest part for us to grasp, I think. A few centimeters a year feels like nothing, but over millions of years, that's enough to build the entire Himalayan mountain range. You have to stretch your perspective.
So let's make this practical. How does understanding all this translate into real-life applications?
The most immediate one is seismic hazard assessment. Knowing where the faults are and how fast they're moving directly informs building codes, infrastructure design, evacuation plans.
In places like California or Japan.
Exactly. It saves lives. It's also a guide for resource exploration.
How so?
Well, these tectonic processes concentrate valuable resources. Metallic ores like copper and gold are often found along subduction zones with all their volcanic activity. Oil and gas are often trapped in basins formed where the crust is pulling apart.
And what about the biggest challenge of all, climate change?
Plate tectonics provides the long-term context. The position of continents controls ocean currents, which redistributes heat around the globe. And mountain uplift from collisions drives a process called chemical weathering.
Which pulls CO2 out of the atmosphere.
Over millions of years, yes. It's Earth's natural thermostat. So understanding that deep history helps us appreciate the truly unprecedented speed of the changes happening right now.
I think what continually surprises me about this story is just the revolutionary nature of it. You start with Wegener being laughed at, and then decades later, technology sonar, GPS, comes along and proves his fundamental idea was right all along.
It's a perfect story of how evidence can eventually overcome skepticism. It's a powerful lesson.
So what's your final thought on this?
For me, it's that while the rigid plate model is a fantastic tool, we have to remember Molnar's life work. The plates are not perfectly rigid. They stretch, they deform, they rotate. The messy reality in those collision zones is where the science is still happening. Our models are always improving.
Which makes you wonder about the future. The Atlantic Ocean is getting wider every year, but what happens millions of years from now when subduction eventually starts somewhere else and that huge ocean begins to close? The Earth is always a work in progress.
A fascinating thought to mull over.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker. Another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.